You are listening to the Reality Steve podcast with your host, Reality Steve. He's got all the latest info and behind-the-scenes juice on Jen's upcoming season of The Bachelorette and interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. Now, here's Reality Steve.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to podcast number 390. I'm your host, Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in. A great podcast interview for you today. It is with Davia Esther Bunch. She was on Zach's season of The Bachelor. She was also on Bachelor in Paradise last summer. So much to get to with her. I can't imagine you will walk away from this interview and not be impressed by her. We'll get to all that momentarily.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So with Davia, didn't get a lot of screen time on Zach's season, never got a one-on-one. She was only on group dates. She was eliminated in episode 4 in the Bahamas. So didn't really get any camera time on Zach's season. Made a little bit of a name for herself in Paradise last summer because, remember, she was the one that came down to the beach, took Tanner out when it was Kat's birthday. And remember, they did that whole montage with Kat talking about it being her birthday and the guy that she likes is on a date with somebody else, and they're doing a shot of Kat, a video shot, film shot of Kat, you know, upset that the guy that she likes is on a date with somebody else. And then they would pan to Tanner and Davia's date, and they're all over each other making out. It was some of the best editing that show did last summer. And I think a lot of people thought that Davia was going to end up getting a rose, and she didn't. However, one of the main reasons for this interview is because Davia has got a backstory that I think a lot of people do not know about. Probably 98% of you don't even know her backstory. The first 20 to 25 minutes, we don't even get into Bachelor or Bachelor in Paradise or what she's doing post-show. The first 20 to 25 minutes of this podcast are all about her upbringing, her dance background, her taking off for the summer to go to Russia on a dance scholarship, about within a year or so, maybe a year and a half, of her mother passing away. Her mother passed away when she was in high school. She talks about that a lot. We talk about the family dynamic when her mother passed away, growing up with a mother who had leukemia. Mother had leukemia for 8 years. So much to get to here, and then what she did when she came back, developing an eating disorder when she was over in Russia. There is a lot of stuff here to unpack. And I'm so glad that Davia was open and honest and vulnerable about it, because sometimes while people might talk about it, maybe they don't go into detail as much. Davia was an open book. And you'll hear her talk about everything in regards to what she went through, how she felt, abandonment issues she feels like she got from her father. I mean, it's a lot. I knew I was going to ask her this stuff, but you never know where a subject is going to take that information and how they're going to answer certain questions. And you're able to tell, like, okay, they don't really want to go there. They're going to give you the surface level answer. Not with Davia. She was absolutely outstanding. I can't wait for you to listen to this interview. So in a little bit, we'll get to that. The Daily Roundup is up. Posted that a couple hours ago. I do talk a little bit about Jen's season. Jesse Palmer basically on his Instagram gave away where they're filming overnights and final rose ceremony. I didn't know. And then Jesse posts with his wife at a resort, which about three or four people emailed me within 30 minutes of him posting saying that resort has been found. It's the Mauna Lani Hotel in the Big Island of Hawaii. So immediately that then spur, you know, once I put it out there, like that's where he is. Clearly that's where they're filming overnights and final rose ceremony. That turned into, well, no wonder the three bachelor couples are out there. Joey and Kelsey, Dalton and Charity, Zach and Katie have all been posting from Hawaii for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 days. Now, I don't have any confirmation that they are there to be part of Jen's overnights and final rose ceremony, but it seems really odd that the most three successful couples in the franchise just happen to be in the same location as where they're filming overnights and final rose ceremony for Jen's season. So I think it's pretty safe to say that those three couples are there for a reason. Yes, they're there to have a vacation, but while they're there, I gotta believe they're gonna make some sort of stop in and maybe speak to the final three guys who are there, which no, I don't know who the final three guys are, but I gotta believe they're there for that. It'd be really surprising if those three couples just decided. I mean, we've never seen this in the history of the show. I don't think any time in the history of the show have the three most recent couples decided, hey, let's go all take a trip together and go to Hawaii. Hell, they haven't even decided to take a trip and go somewhere else. Like, you know, because clearly there's not any weirdness anymore. Joey was on Charity season and, you know, Charity dumped Joey at the altar, essentially. But he's with Kelsey now. There's obviously no hard feelings there, but it just still seems like, why would these couples just randomly go to Hawaii together, you know? And knowing now that the show is in Hawaii filming, it's like, okay, we kind of know. Nothing's confirmed. It's not locked in that the couples are there to be part of Jen's season, but I don't think it's far-fetched if we do find out later on that, yeah, that's what they're there for. I do a reader email from a question that's been asked a few times over the last few years to me, so I figured I'd answer it. That's part of the Daily Roundup. I also talk about Survivor for a little bit and also The Venetian. By the way, anybody that's interested in the Reality Steve Fan Appreciation Party this year, number 8, there are no spots left. There haven't been any spots left for a couple months. That's why I haven't really been promoting it, because anybody that would email me after hearing it, I wouldn't be able to give you a spot. It's possible when I do a final headcount in a couple weeks and email everybody that some people drop out, say they can't make it anymore. I might have some available spots open up. I'll let you know if I do, but there are already a couple on the list already waiting to get on. And last year was the first year that everybody who said they were coming showed up. So if that's the case this year, then we're right at 100 people and I can't go over 100. So, but I do have an update on The Venetian, where the party is at, because Venetian, I don't know if you know this, this year, 2024, is their 25th birthday. They were built in 1999, so they're doing renovations for their, really the first major renovations in 25 years. I think it's $3.5 billion they're pouring into the hotel for renovations, and a lot of them are on the rooms. They're not bulldozing any of the rooms. It's more or less doing interior decorating on them. You're going to have better lighting, better carpeting. They're putting new TVs in the room. So just stuff like that. But I found a little snippet of what they're doing and I figured I'd read that to everybody on the Daily Roundup today. So check that out if you're interested. This podcast is brought to you by Way. You're too busy to be frizzy. Grab Way's new anti-frizz cream. Ladies, you got to have this. Lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. Saves time when you're getting ready. You want to do a get ready with me video? If you already have your frizz cream in, it'll help you save time. It provides immediate frizz control, lasts up to 72 hours, plus heat protection up to 450 degrees, helps reduce and repair split ends while quenching dry hair with intense hydration. According to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agree that their hair looks less frizzy. Why would you not want to get in on the action with Way's new anti-frizz cream? You need it. You love it. Every single one of my female friends I've given it to absolutely loves it and says it has taken away their frizz. And all my female friends are pretty much here in Texas. And it gets hot, it gets humid, and it gets frizzy here in Texas. So frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theway.com, theouai.com, and enter promo code REALITYSTEVE for 15% off any product. That's theway.com, theouai.com, promo code REALITYSTEVE for 15% off any product.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, let's get going. Podcast number 390. Okay, let's bring her in. You saw her on Zach's season of The Bachelor, and then last summer on season 9 of Bachelor in Paradise. First time coming on the podcast. It is Davia Esther Bunch. Davia, so great to finally have you on.
I know. I feel like I know you already just because I've heard your voice so many times.
Well, thank you. One of the things that, you know, we have plenty to get to with your time on The Bachelor and Bachelor in Paradise. But one of the reasons that I've always done this and I've been doing this now for 7 years is I've always said that everybody's got a story, and sometimes people on this show last a long time. So we get to know a lot about them. We meet their families. They'll get to talk about something that happened in their life during a one-on-one date and all that stuff. And then sometimes some people last 2 or 3 or 4 episodes and it's like, but we barely got to know them. And unfortunately, you fit into that category because you got sent home in episode 4 of Zach's season and then before you went on, you know, Paradise. But you have a backstory that I think not a lot of people know about. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on and talk about it. And that is this. So, I mean, I hate to start off the podcast on such kind of a down note, but it is part of your story. And I know it's important to you. And that's the fact that when you were in elementary school, your mother was diagnosed with leukemia, and she passed when you were in high school. And you dealt with it, I think I read 8 years you had to go through that. Can you talk about that and what it was like growing up with a mom during those formative years, you know, your elementary school years and your high school years with a mom who was very sick?
Yeah, I think this entire experience, for a long time, it was something that I was really embarrassed by, because growing up, when my mom was first diagnosed with leukemia, I was in elementary school, and it was kind of something that was hidden. She would go in for bone marrow taps, but it wasn't until I was in middle school when it started really declining. And I come from a very, very humble family beginnings. My dad was a youth pastor growing up, and my mom worked for the church, and she would also teach dance classes. Because at that time, growing up, dance was all I loved to do, but we really couldn't afford classes. And so my mom really stepped in to be that provider to try and make sure that no matter what, I could always live out my dreams. And so when she started getting really sick, we were living in Georgia at the time, and we had to move back to South Carolina. It was 2008. The market was terrible, and we had to actually move into my grandparents' house. And so for about 2 years. It was my family of five living in a three-bedroom household with my grandmother and my uncle. And so as a middle schooler, it's really embarrassing. Like, I didn't want to bring people back to my house. I didn't want people to know like what our living situation was like, but going through such a rough time. But then also with that coupling with watching my mom become progressively sicker, really shaped me to be a very empathetic person. And I think that shows why I was never in any of the drama on the show. But fast forward, while I was still living with my grandparents, my mom got sick to the point where she needed a bone marrow transplant. And so my dad and my mom went to live in Atlanta, Georgia. She was getting treatment at Emory University. And my brothers and I basically lived with my grandparents, who my grandmother is one of the strongest women I've ever met in my entire life. She practically raised me. I lived with her for about 2 years. And then when we thought that the bone marrow transplant was going to be it, I was in high school at this time. We really had high hopes. She got something that's called graft versus host disease. And so instead of accepting that foreign bone marrow, her body actually started rejecting it. And her own body started slowly attacking herself, to where that disease spread to her lungs. And that was kind of what ultimately was the end of her story. And so being 19, and at that time I was 15, I remember no one ever prepares you for moments like this. My mom was watching someone you love slowly die from cancer is one of the scariest things you'll ever watch in your life, because you watch someone so full of life become sick and frail. But even through that, she was such a joyful person. And I still remember the day I was sitting in the library and I had one of my teachers come up to me. Well, they first came up to each other. They're in a group just talking. And they came up to me and they're like, "Your dad called, you need to go home immediately." And I just remember the last thing I said to my mom that morning was I like kissed her on the forehead and I told her goodbye and I loved her and I was going to school. And so I had to go to the guidance counselor, get a leave of absence. And then like all of a sudden, it's like your body knows whenever bad things happen. I just knew in that moment that she wasn't there anymore. And I remember just bawling my eyes out, crying. And to this day, like, I still feel like God put this interaction there for a reason, because I was literally bawling my eyes out, crying on my way out of the building by myself to drive myself home to face the inevitable. And I ran into one of my friends. And something that I've always struggled with is I hate people having pity for me or feeling sorry for me, because I always feel like I have to be the stronger person. And I ran into this guy. He saw me crying and he was like, "What's wrong?" And I literally just blurted out, "I think my mom just passed away." And for some reason, God put this guy in front of me who his mother has passed away. And the only thing that he said to me is, "It's going to be okay." And typically in situations like that, that's not what you usually hear. You're met with a lot of, "I'm sorry. You know, I'm here for you. It's going to be okay." And so still to this day, I'm so thankful for that interaction.
And this was a complete stranger?
It was one of my friends from high school.
Okay.
But it was just really comforting to hear that. Mm-hmm. And so at 15, I lost my mom to cancer. And then through that, you know, I have like a very complicated family. I have a younger brother, my dad, and then I had a half brother. And my older half brother, my mom was his only parent at that time. So I had my older brother who lost his only like true blood parent that was still in his life. My dad lost his wife, and my younger brother was a baby at the time. I think he was only 12. And so I felt like I really had to step in and be the one who supported my family. And so I really shut off a lot of emotions. And I tried the best that I could to cope.
Yeah.
And then, you know, watching your dad start dating again and put himself out there was really difficult during that time when we were grieving. My dad ended up remarrying about 8 months later. So I lost my mom in January. My dad was remarried in August. And that, even though that entire upbringing was extremely like traumatizing and hard to go through, I'm really proud of the person that it's made me. But when it comes in terms of being open and honest and vulnerable, I've been able to do that honestly through pageants. It was the first thing that gave me a platform to really talk about my story. Yeah. But I was able to talk about it from a place of strength, of overcoming something, you know. But talking about it from a place of vulnerabilities and sharing the hard parts that people don't really know about was really difficult for me. And The Bachelor was the first time where I was like faced with having to do that. But yeah, it's something that I've learned to cope through. I've learned about different wounds that has created in my life and created in my love life. And it's something that I've had to process.
Well, one of the things that I saw, this was a quote from after, I believe, it was a quote that I read that you said, and when you were talking about this in your past, you mm-hmm. said, basically after your mother passed, you said, instead of confronting my issues, I ran away. My dad married a new wife that year. I ran to Russia on a dance scholarship. Then I got an eating disorder. So this is something that, okay, so you just did the timeline a little bit. I think you said this was your mother passed in what year? 08?
So she passed in, I think it was 2012 or 2013.
Okay.
One of those 2 years.
Okay, so that happens. You said your dad remarries 8 months later. How soon after that did you leave to Russia on a dance scholarship? Like, we hear about people, you know, kind of running away and maybe like, oh, I needed to get away or whatever. But you went to a whole different country on a dance scholarship. So how long had passed after either your mother's passing or your dad's remarriage? I guess we could just add on 8 months. But how long after did you do that?
My mom's biggest sacrifice in life was being there for me very selfishly to support my dreams of always doing professional ballet. And even during any second that she was in the States, like during her cancer treatments, like whenever she was back and healthy enough, she was in the studio teaching dance so that I could afford to live that dream. And whenever she was getting really sick, I was on full scholarship at my dance studio. And it felt like that dance to me was the only thing in my life that I felt like I had control over. And so it just became this overwhelming passion and joy and love. And when my mother passed away, it felt like the only tangible thing that I had that was still close to her. And when my life felt like it was really turning upside down, the only place that I had to run to that felt like comfort and stability and hard work, a place where no one pitied me, where I just worked hard. And instead of someone telling me how, you know, kind and strong I am, they gave me corrections on things that I wanted to work on. And they actually helped me become a really amazing dancer. And so the day after my mom passed away, I was back in the studio. I fought tooth and nail with my family, but I was back in studio dancing because that was the only sense of control that I had. And so from that day, I think I ended up going to Russia that next summer. I was dancing every single day, like relentless on the, it was up to me that I was not letting go of this dream because I felt like I would be disappointing her. And so I worked really hard and it gave me control and it gave me an escape outside of my family dynamics at that time. And I got to the point where I literally found myself in Moscow dancing at the Bolshoi Ballet Academy for an entire summer. And then that control over my life spiraled into perfectionism at that time. And I remember, you know, you're in Russia, you're in a foreign country, And one of the ballet teachers there told us that guys weren't allowed to partner with girls unless they weighed less than 110 pounds. And so for me, that perfectionism, that control, that desire to be in charge of my own life when everything felt like it was working against me ended up leading into an eating disorder. And it flew very under the radar with my family because of everything we were going through at the time. And it wasn't until I literally passed out in a ballet class one day and my ballet teachers actually took me to a nutritionist that I had to deal with that head on.
So how long were you in Russia? How many months? Just the summer?
An entire summer. Okay. I got offered a stay to stay there for the entire year. But because of everything going on in my internal family dynamics, it was just not the right choice for my parents. And I was so embarrassed, but I was like 17. I was like on the flight home from Moscow, just like crying. But I do think that was in the grand scheme of my life, that was not my decision, but it was the best decision for me.
Yeah. I'm going to say, like, you're a teenager. I'm guessing maybe one of the first times you've been away from home, you're in a foreign country. Like you said, all these pressures, and I mean, it's very, we hear stories all the time. It's very common. Yeah. What you went through was not out of the blue. Like, this is very common in the dance world and stuff like that. But I guess my question would be, was it the nutritionist or, you know, passing out? What was the thing that pulled you out of, hey, I can't do this anymore to my body?
So it wasn't even that, you know, I was still really gung-ho about wanting to make this a career. Seeing the nutritionist and having my ballet studio, especially the teachers and the mentors that I had there as a guide in my life, really helped the eating disorder part of it. But I was set on dancing in a ballet company. And I remember I auditioned for all of these companies after my senior year of high school. I got accepted to the Orlando Ballet. And then again, it was my dad's decision that he wanted me to go to college for a year. Because the offer that I got, I wouldn't be able to really financially sustain myself by myself, financially support myself. So I went to the one school that I applied to, which was the University of South Carolina. And I was on a dance scholarship and I was studying Russian language at the time. And I was put into, as a freshman, I was put into like a higher level class and I was given a lot of great opportunities to dance. But because I was pouring everything into dance at the time, I wasn't going to football games. I was working. I was like financially supporting myself at that time. So all I did my freshman year of college was dance, work, study. And it got to the point where I had no friends my first year of college. I had a couple of friends, but I was in a higher class than the girls my age. I wasn't in a sorority. And then I was in classes with girls a lot older than me, like getting good parts. And it wasn't until I actually injured my back really, really badly prepping for a performance. I didn't have an understudy, and I would go from going to PT and being in a back brace to performing on stage. And I don't know what it was. I think I just reached my breaking point and I was so burnt out, or I just kind of threw my hands in the air and I said, this is not worth it. And that was the hardest decision that I've ever had to do in my life. But in that moment, I think it gave me my control back and it allowed me to heal. And it allowed me to really think about everything that I had experienced in life and say, like, how do I use this? Or how do I make something out of this? Because my entire life, I thought I was going to be a professional ballet dancer. And I'm sitting here at a college that I never wanted to go to. I don't know what the hell I'm going to study. I never really pursued academics that hard. And that's kind of how pageants fell into my lap.
I was going to say, so you're a junior, I believe, at South Carolina, and I don't know how many you had competed in before you won, but explain how that came to be. Like, what made you decide to go the pageant route? Were you recruited? Were you just like, oh, this is something that looks interesting? Was there flyers going around campus to compete? Like, what made you want to enter the Miss South Carolina pageant. You went in as Miss Spartanburg, I believe, correct?
Yeah. Okay. So the first year I competed was, so I stopped dancing first semester of my sophomore year. That's when I got my injury.
Okay.
And then by spring, I was competing in pageants. I competed for 1 year, and then my second year, I won Miss South Carolina. Like when I said, I spent my first 2 years dancing and just trying to figure out how to afford life every single day. Like I was dancing, I was waitressing, and then I was teaching ballet in Greenville, which is like an hour and a half from my college. Like I was a busy bee. And so when I gave up dance, I was like, A, how do I make friends? B, how do I pay for college? And C, like, what do I do with myself? I've been such like a passion and goal driven person. Like, I can't just be a sitting duck in college. And so I found the Miss America organization. I'd been following it for years. And I saw that the winner of Miss South Carolina gets scholarship money. And I was $25,000 in debt at this point. And Miss South Carolina won $30,000 to $40,000 in scholarships.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? They have a talent competition. Like, I'm like a shoo-in. I've watched Miss America Talents before. Like, I can do this. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I think I lost my first three pageants, but I won talent every single time. And I just got the bug. Like, it made me really passionate about something again. It gave me an outlet to dance. And then most importantly, it was the first time I had ever spoken publicly about my mother's passing. And not in a way that I think I was still properly healing from it, but it gave me a purpose. And so through my first year competing and then the year that I won Miss South Carolina, I was able to graduate school debt-free, which is something that was never even an opportunity for me ever without Miss America. And I was able to talk about my mom in a way that inspired me to help others. And I got involved with Be the Match, and I got to spread awareness about bone marrow donation and how easy the bone marrow registry is. And I traveled to different colleges around South Carolina, and I signed up people for the bone marrow registry because, you know, young stem cells are the best stem cells. And so the registry really was missing a gap for people 18 to 25 to become bone marrow donors. And I kind of championed that cause throughout my entire years in South Carolina. So it allowed me an opportunity to live with purpose in a time where I felt like I didn't have one.
Yeah, I read that, you know, basically the platform you ran on for Miss USA, right? It's not Miss America. Or is Miss USA or Miss? I always mix those two up. What was it?
It's okay. Miss America.
Miss America. So the platform you ran on was Be the Match. And like I said, that's kind of huge that you were able to do that and speak about it for the first time and then go around to other colleges and get students to sign up and be bone marrow donors.
Yeah.
Like that's really cool that you were able to do that. And I got to believe that was somewhat fulfilling for you considering the way your mom had passed. And now this is like in her honor to be able to do that for others going forward.
It was. And I mean, still to this day, that impact that I had during that year, I get to see the trickle effects of it. I think it was a couple months ago, one of my friends from college texted me. She was a dancer with me. And she texted me saying that she signed up for the bone marrow registry while I was Miss South Carolina. And she got a call, you know, 4 years later that she was a match for someone. And she went through the process and ended up becoming their bone marrow donor. So I still haven't gotten the call, but that is probably one of the best text messages that I've received in my life. And little things like that spur up here and there, or opportunities where I've run into people and say that they were called for a match, but they were too scared to go through the bone marrow process, and just being able to be educated and talk about it and really change people's perspectives. It's one of the most fulfilling things I've ever been able to be a part of.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, you know, we spent the first here 20 minutes or so roughly talking about probably the most important stuff of that I wanted to get out, and I wanted people to know about you, because this was never brought up. You never had a one-on-one date where you were able to go into this with Zach. I don't think you talked about this at all on Paradise. That's not really the place for it.
I talked about it with Tanner on our date.
Oh, so you did?
He got to know. Okay. Yeah. So he got to know that. And then I wore a bracelet in memory of my mom on Paradise. My mom used to always say, just keep swimming. It was like a one from Finding Nemo, but two, one of her favorite bands had a song. He was diagnosed with the same cancer my mom was and survived it and wrote a song about it called Swim. And so everyone in my family has a swim related tattoo, but I didn't. So I wore a bracelet that said Swim on it throughout all of Paradise. And so I was able to talk about it a lot with the cast. And so everybody knew how important it was to me. But yeah, just some things just never make it on air.
Yeah. It's funny. I thought the only thing you talked about with Tanner was the fact you had two different color eyes. That's
exactly.
But no, I really appreciate you sharing all that about your mother and your past and your eating disorder. Cause not, you know, it's not easy to talk about, but I'm glad that it's out there and I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah. And one thing I will say is I am so proud of that moment that Daisy and Kelsey had where right before Kelsey and Joey got engaged, she told her that her mom was looking down and really proud of her. And I thought that was the sweetest moment ever. And I texted Kelsey and so just let her know that I was really proud of her and shared my story a little bit with her. So it's really happy to see like that representation being carried, because a lot of times you can feel so alone, but there's so many strong women who've gone through this experience, like me, Kelsey, Lexi. So I was really, really excited to see that their stories were able to be shared.
Yeah, for sure.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Now, when we talk about the whole Bachelor, we haven't even discussed your time on Zach, your time on Zach's season. We haven't even talked about Paradise. We're going to get into that right now. So,
oh yeah,
I guess, where do we start? I'm going to start where I start with everybody. Is basically, okay, we know you were on Zach's season. How did it happen for you? Were you recruited? Were you like Greer sitting at home one night and nominated yourself? Like, how did it happen for you, the casting process?
Oh my goodness. So mine was a mix. So before I was on The Bachelor, I was in a 6-year relationship and then a 2-year relationship. And during that time, The Bachelor was never on my radar. But when I was Miss South Carolina and competing in pageants, my spray tan artist was Holly Julian, who actually met her husband on The Bachelor pad.
Yeah.
And so Holly Julian's like one of my favorite human beings in this entire world. She's a phenomenal mother, such a strong woman. And I was back at Miss South Carolina as a former, and she was giving me a spray tan. And we were talking about my breakup and how I was coping with it. And she goes, well, you know, I got Sarah Hamrick on The Bachelor last season. Do you want me to send your name in? And I was like, absolutely. And then a week later, I got a call from a producer while I was on the in the gym. And that was in June. And then the rest is history.
Oh, okay. So Holly nominated you and they called you. Okay.
So Holly got me on The Bachelor. I thought her good luck was going to rub off on me, but it didn't.
So at what point, you obviously know that that Zach's going to be The Bachelor. Were you a fan of the show? Had you watched it? Did you, once you realized you were going to be on it, like, okay, maybe I'll watch Rachel and Gabby's season so I can see which guy I'm involved with. Did Zach appeal to you? Did you just be like, all right, well, I want to go on it. I don't know if he appeals to me. when you were watching Gabby and Rachel's season, what did you think of Zach? And was this someone that you were attracted to and somebody thought, okay, this could work?
So I was a big fan of the show. I think I've watched it for a while. In college, I lived with one of my pageant coaches. So my last year of college, I lived with an older gay guy, and we would sit at home and watch Hannah Brown and Peter's season together and drink wine and just talk about it. And then we turn on Drag Race. So I've grown up basically watching The Bachelor, but I kind of stopped watching after Matt James's season. And so when I was being casted, I watched all of Gabby and Rachel's season, and Zach was just never on my radar. He was not one of the guys that I said I was interested in. But I remember when he was casted, I was still really happy with the decision, but I was okay, let's see how this is going to shake out. Yeah. And so I was really happy, and Zach is the nicest guy ever. So I wasn't disappointed.
Okay. Obviously, we go over the dates with the people who went on and stuff like that. So you show up. You were obviously only on group dates. And the first group date that you were on was the Bachelor Big, the one with Lotta, with the rapper.
Yes.
The rapper. And
with,
yeah. Courtney.
It was Bad Bitch Energy.
Yeah, the Bad Bitch Energy one. So you do that, and you had the former alumni show up, and Tajwan and Courtney and Victoria, and I don't know when you did that. So that's your first group date of the season. Did you get a lot of time with Zach after that? Did you not? How was it with Zach?
Absolutely not. I think I talked to Zach night one. I talked to Zach at that group date, and then I talked to Zach at that rose ceremony, and then I did not get to talk to Zach until the night that I went home 2 weeks later. And I don't know what it was. I was begging to talk to him. I tried so hard, but for some reason I just was not able to talk to him. And when I got sent home at the Bahamas, I was just kind of at my wit's end. I was I haven't got to talk to this man in almost 2.5 weeks. I think I was the last girl to talk to him that night, and then I got sent home. So it just was not in the cards for us. We had no foundation to even build a relationship at that point, and that's why I wasn't on the season. I didn't even get to speak to the man for almost the entire time I was there.
Even at cocktail parties and after parties, you never got to.
I begged. I was on a mission to talk to him, but I just kept. I was told oh, sorry, ran out of time. Oh, sorry. There was a point where I got up to go and find him, and I was told to sit back down. I was like, "Geez, Louise, man." I was like, "This is not working out in my favor."
My gosh. I mean, we've heard the story. We've heard the stories throughout the years. They're very controlling of who gets to talk to and when. But even on, group date after parties, you think that everybody's going to get time. Some people obviously will get more time than others because there might be a, hey, can I steal you for a sec? But to never get any time with him the whole time you were there is just oh my gosh. So even, the week 3 date, you were, the football date, same thing. Now, there were a lot of women on that date.
Yeah, I didn't get to talk to him that entire week. I lost the football game, poured my heart and soul on the field. Got plummeted to the ground. We lost. I didn't get to talk to him. I didn't get to talk to him that rose ceremony night. And then we went to the Bahamas, and then didn't get to talk to him on the group date. And then, I think the last thing you see of me is me sobbing into Katie's arms, because I had expressed that I was getting really sad that I hadn't been able to talk to Zach. And on the show, I talked really openly about everything that had happened with my mom. But that was the first time I was posed the question of what hurts you more, you losing your mom or you losing your dad throughout that. And so it completely rewired my brain, and it really brought to the surface an abandonment attachment wound that I never knew that I had, which I expressed. And then so not being able to see Zach and feel like I wasn't being able to talk to Zach really brought out all of that emotions that I felt like I was never able to process throughout, you know, losing my mother, like pursuing ballet, like going to Miss America, and then going straight on to The Bachelor. It was the first time I've ever had to sit alone with all of those feelings. And I just like broke down into Katie's arms, and then I got sent home.
Well, wait, now I guess I never really touched on this when you brought it up earlier, but when they asked about losing your dad, meaning when he got married so quickly after your mother had passed, did your relationship just deteriorate with him? Is that what they were referring to?
Yeah, it really created a peg in my relationship with my dad. Hmm. It never like ruined it, but it did alter the way that I operated at home. Like since the day that my mom passed, even before that, I mean, my dad wasn't really around a lot when my mom was getting cancer treatments. So it was really just me and my younger brother. And at that time, my dad remarried. He ended up, they had their own child together, which is my little sister, and I adore her to death. But I made sure that the only person that I was there to protect was my little brother. So me and my little brother got out of the house as many times as we could. And I think, you know, being able to speak about all of that during my years in South Carolina and being able to champion a cause and like, I'm doing this for my mom. I never once processed the fact that through losing my mother, I lost a part of my dad. And I had never once thought about it until I was posed that question on The Bachelor. And so being in that heightened environment, coming to that realization and having to process all of those feelings was really, really difficult for me. And that night, I remember I was like begging to go talk to Zach, and I was put in a situation where I saw him pull Kat, and Kat had already had a one-on-one and got the rose. And I was like, why do I keep, like, it just really brought up that fear of abandonment and not feeling worthy enough, and like having like men in my life either like walk away or not choose me, which is not true. It was just emotions that I had to process, and it really just got to the point where it hit an emotional cap for me. And so that is me crying into Katie's arms. And I think I snotted all over her pretty dress, but it's okay.
So that ended your time on Zach's season.
It did.
And obviously, you know, Paradise is coming up and you're preparing to go to Paradise. And then about 2 weeks before you leave to go to Paradise, a certain blogger out there, can't remember who it was. Maybe you can refresh my memory.
It was you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was me. Get some information that you are in attendance at a Zach Bryan concert in South Carolina.
Great concert.
Clearly on a date with, or maybe it wasn't. I was told it was. It looked like one. But anyway, that you were on a date with Peter Weber. I put it out there. And I said, look, I have no idea what this means. I have no idea if this means they're both going to go down there and we're going to see both of them on Paradise. And that's going to be like a couple. One of them's going to go down there. Because at that time, there were rumors that Peter Weber was going to show up on Paradise. And then I think about days beforehand, it was just like it was killed that he wasn't. So I was like, I don't know. I said, look, all I know is that they were at this concert together. I have no idea if this means they're both going, one of them's going, whatever the case may be. But you ended up obviously going down to Paradise. But since I was the one who broke the story and told everybody, what can you fill us in on what that was all about? And were you contemplating maybe not going to Paradise because there may have been, you know, something with Peter? Or you just said, I'm still going to Paradise. I don't care.
So after, let's backtrack a little bit because I feel like this will help explain.
Yeah.
After getting off of Zach's season, I emotionally processed a lot in my life. It was the first time where I didn't know if I was going to do Paradise. Like, I wasn't invited to Women's Health All, so I was like shocked if I was even going to get the ask to go to Paradise. So it was the first time that I sat in my life without a goal. Like, I'm not trying to work to be a professional dancer. I'm not trying to be Miss America right now. I'm not trying to get on The Bachelor. So I was like going to therapy. I was like working on myself. I was working through all of these issues that The Bachelor really brought to surface. And once I got the call for Paradise, I was like, okay, like I'm prepared. Now, leading up to Paradise, I found out that my job wasn't going to let me keep my position if I did the show again. But I was at this point where I was really wanting to make this decision for myself and start a new chapter in my life. And so I had already told my job that I would be leaving my position before I went on Paradise. And Peter and I got connected. He was going to be in Charleston and invited me to go to the Zach Bryan concert. I didn't know what it was at first because I had heard the rumors about him and Kelly. I was like very hesitant, but I was like, you know what? Like, let's see what happens. And that was honestly, honest to God, that was one of the best dates. And I think it was a date. Yeah. It was the best date I think I've ever been on. I mean, we went to the Zach Bryan concert. Like, it was so easy.
That the first time you had met him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I didn't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it was the first time I met him.
But you had spoken and I'm assuming messaged each other before and were talking before.
Yeah.
That. Okay.
Exactly. And I remember at that concert, so many people were coming up to him asking for photos that my friends knew I was on a date with him. Every time they saw someone post on their story of, oh my gosh, I'm with Peter at the Zach Bryan concert, they're like, did you take this photo? And I was like, yes, I took every single one of those photos. So I was just like going around, like I was like his little assistant.
You were his Instagram girlfriend.
That's what yeah, I was. It was, but we had dinner before, so we got to know each other. We went to the concert. We ended up meeting like all of my friends at my favorite bar in Charleston. And then we ended up going to a silent disco afterwards. So being able to do all of those things with someone, like you got to be really comfortable. But it like came to the point where he told me he wasn't going on Paradise. And I was like, I've sacrificed so much to be able to do Paradise. Like, I can't back out. Like, I'm doing it for myself. And then from there, it's just like, it was really just like life took us in different directions. So he was making decisions for himself. He didn't want to do the show. I was making decisions for myself. I was like, I need to do the show. It's like 2 weeks out. I've already quit my job. You know, like I got to ride this thing through. And so that's kind of what happened there.
So I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask was your living situation. When you got back from filming Zach's season,
yeah.
I guess my question is, at what point did you move to New York? Was that not until after you got back from Paradise filming? Was it Zach's filming?
Yeah.
When was it?
So that was like another wrench. Like I went to Paradise. I really put all my cards on the table because I was really looking for someone. I quit my job. I filmed Paradise for 3 days and came home to, I was living in Charleston still at the time.
Okay.
So I came home to my apartment with no job and like no relationship to show from my time on Paradise or anything really to show from my time on Paradise, which is a really shitty feeling. And I remember waking up in my hotel room the night that I got sent home. And I had the biggest panic attack of my life because all I could think of, what did I just give all of my life up for? Because I really gave every part of my life up to be there for Paradise.
Yeah.
And so when I came back, I got really scrappy. I started doing freelance marketing and then I was applying to jobs in that time. And I knew I wanted to move to New York. So again, like I made the decision for myself to go to Paradise, made the decision for myself to move to New York. And I just kind of made it happen. I don't know how I ended up 2 months later getting my dream job here in New York City. And I kind of just, the day I signed my job was the day I signed my lease. And then a week later, I was in a U-Haul driving through the night to move to New York City. So, I mean, I went from having the biggest panic attack of my life, waking up the day after I got sent home from Paradise, just like feeling like I gave up everything for nothing, to a couple months later, like, honestly, it sounds so corny, but like living my dream life, and it's all because I chose myself every part of the way.
Well, it sounds like you're a real go-getter. That's what it sounds like. Like most people in that position would probably sulk a little bit longer or maybe even never get out of that funk of, holy shit.
Oh no.
I've just done two shows.
And I'm scrappy.
Yeah. And I've just done two shows. I don't have anything to show for it. I just lost my job. I'm in South Carolina. I don't know what to do. And then like you literally you know, pull up your bootstraps and boom, you're in New York and you get your dream job. I mean, that's not a lot of people can say that.
Yeah. I mean, I've spent my whole life like having to be independent. Like I worked really hard in college the back before, like I paid for pageants all by myself. Like I'm not afraid to like work really hard. And I had a great career in Charleston. But I remember when I came back, I was like, I have no money. I don't have family that can help me through this situation. And I remember when Susie was off of The Bachelor, she used to post a lot of videos of her waitressing. And I was like, I was in South Carolina. Like I was on The Bachelor. I was like, but I need money. And so like, I really had to check myself and I got all of these marketing clients, but then also at night, like I was waitressing and I was like, you know what? This is for a season. Like, I'm going to be really humble and I would waitress and take photos with people in my apron because they recognized me from The Bachelor. And then I would like work on my marketing clients in the morning. And I was, honest to God, making more money doing that than I was at my full-time marketing job. And like really putting myself through the ringer of just like working really hard, being humble about it, checking my ego of like, I've accomplished all of these things, but that doesn't make me better than any of the people that I'm working in this service industry with. And like really being humble and working hard, like I ended up where I needed to be at the time. So no matter like how hard things in life can get, as long as you persevere and keep pushing through, like there's always going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. So yeah, what? it's quite the journey to get to New York, but
yeah. And, just to backtrack a little bit, we still have to talk about your 3 days on Paradise because they were very eventful, especially on television. So when we saw you arrive there, and we know everybody that arrives on Paradise comes with a date card, you immediately knew you wanted to ask Tanner out. Now, I don't think they even showed you talking to anyone else, but it's possible you did and they chose not to show it. Did you talk to multiple people? Were you open to others or you knew, I just want to ask Tanner out? And if that were the case, we know that people talk beforehand on Paradise. Had you ever exchanged messages with Tanner? Did you know anything? Or was he just a guy that you saw and you're just like, yeah, I just want to ask him out?
So leading up before Paradise, like the one person that I was like dying for them to go, I found out wasn't going. And then I had like my date with Peter.
Who was that? Peter?
No. Okay. It wasn't Peter. I think like it takes me a lot to really like someone. And the only person that I found myself like really, really attracted to was Spencer Swice from Gabby and Rachel's season.
Yeah.
But I found out he's not going. We ended up being like, we're good friends now. But once I found out he wasn't going, and then once I found out Peter wasn't going, Paradise had already started filming. And I was at my best friend's house, Kat Velasco. She's a country singer. And she was literally going, who are you? At this point, I kind of knew who all the guys were on the beach were.
Yeah.
And she goes, who are you, like, who the hell are you going to ask out? And I was like, Kat, I do not know. Like, at that point, there was not a single guy on my radar. And so she's like, okay, give me your phone. We got to look up who these boys are. So I kind of go through all of the Instagrams of the boys. And I was like, well, Tanner's really cute. And she's like, let me look at his Instagram. And then she gives me my phone back. And she's like, good luck. I just liked his last 4 photos. And I was like, no. It's like you like internally melt. You're like, oh, my God, you did not. And then he liked my story. And then he left for Paradise filming. So at that point, I was like, okay, he's cute. He liked my story. So like, he must think I'm kind of cute. And so I got there and like, truly, I was like, you know what? I had nothing to lose. And he was truly the only person that I was interested in. And I did not talk to a single other guy, which I should have, because I probably would have found out it was Kat's birthday. But yeah. I don't know. I really just went for it.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to ask, is that turned into a whole thing because you go and ask him and he immediately, well, I think he went and talked to Kat and she wasn't happy because it was her birthday and he was in a, you know, whatever you want to call it, a relationship with her at that time, or they were the ones that were, I guess, coupled up at that time. And so she wasn't happy. You guys go on this date and just obviously the way it was edited was, I remember it was one of, you know what, I'll give them credit. It was one of the better editing jobs they had ever done, because they're showing Kat on the beach being miserable that the guy that she's coupled up with is on another date. And then every time they cut to you on your date, you guys are literally in the throes of passion and making out. And I was like, this is really good editing. I'll give them that. But it was very like, they really played that storyline up. And actually, Kat just recently last week went on She's All Batches podcast and said like, she never had anything negative to you. It was never about you.
No,
she was never
Kat
mad
and I
at you.
Are friends. Yeah.
She was never mad
and
at
I
you.
And I knew that too. But to me, it's like, I don't function well in drama. I just kind of like let it ride out. And I was so hands off and all of that. My first priority was just like making sure Kat was okay. And then I was like, okay, let's just like see where the cards fall. And so Tanner's and I date. Our date was really great. Like a lot of connection. I was really happy with it. But then after the date, I think I had no idea until watching the show back that Tanner ended things with Kat. I thought Kat ended things with Tanner. And so it was because that's what Kat told me.
Well, in her mind, she did.
I don't think she really spelled it. Yeah. And still, like, you just never know the way things are edited. Yeah. So I wanted to give Tanner his space to kind of work through that. And so we did have like a lot of talks, a lot of conversations. I had no clue that he was also talking to Jess and Rachel. And I remember the rose ceremony. I mean, I was getting anxiety about it because I saw him like hanging out with them. And so I don't know. I just remember talking to Aaron B the night of the rose ceremony, and he came up to me and he was like, yeah, like Tanner told me, and unless something goes absolutely chaotic tonight, like you're getting his rose. And I really felt so confident that we had gotten through that and like we were actually going to start to make it work. But obviously that was not what's happened. But I think that truly was for the best. Like Tanner's a great guy. We're like friends now. And if it wasn't going to work through that, it was never going to work in the real world.
Yeah, I was going to say like once he maybe made it known or you realized, oh, him and Kat are no longer a couple. And I think that might have been right around the time that Kat showed interest in John Henry. You probably thought like, okay, well, he just went on a date with me. The girl that he was kind of coupled up with before me, he is now not seeing. I got to be the one that I'm going to get a rose. And then he ends up giving it to Rachel of all people who I think they may have kissed at that point or something like that. But it was kind of, as for viewers, I remember being a little shocked, like, wait a second, why didn't he give it to Davi? That seemed like they had this great date. They clearly had a physical connection here. Did he ever give you a reason, either out there in Mexico or after the show, like why he didn't pick you over Rachel?
I was honestly really, really shocked as well.
Yeah.
Cause like right before the rose ceremony, we had like kissed, we had like a cute little moment. I could tell things were like a little bit off, but I just thought he was stressed. So I never got a reason in Mexico, and like we've connected, but I think he just told me he's being pulled in a lot of different directions and was doing what was best for him.
Yeah.
And I've like heard in podcasts that like after our date, he felt like just that spark wasn't there anymore. And that's like completely valid. I did like on our date, I opened up to him about everything with my mom. And I remember telling him, I've been through really hard things. If you're not into me, it's not going to hurt. I can get over it. I just don't want to feel like I'm wasting my time here. And it really sucks that that's exactly what happened. But also looking back, I don't think there was anybody else on that beach I really would have connected with. So I don't know what I really would have done. And also, looking back, it was a really shitty situation for me, and it was a really shitty situation to have to come home to, but it made me scrappy, and I don't know. I mean, I probably would have been here where I am in New York now, but I don't know. I don't think I would have changed anything looking back.
Well, that's good. And like I said, you get eliminated there, and we've already discussed, like, what happened with you when you got back, and you're just like, I'm going to move to New York, and you put in some work, like you said, doing restaurant and waitressing, and then you just decided, I'm going to go to New York. You, at some point, you know, connect with Greer, and you guys end up moving in together into New York. So you talked earlier about the fact that you have your dream job in New York. Tell everybody what that is, what you're doing now. We see, you know, you have absolutely some really great content that I think you put out on your Instagram. Like, there's people in the franchise that try And I think there are others that are just better at it. And I think your content, even though it's not, you know, designed for someone like me, it's more for, you know, women out there. I can appreciate someone. Yeah, I can appreciate someone who puts out actually good content that's like professionally shot and it's done. And the stories are really good and it looks good. Like the aesthetic of it, the aesthetics of it make it, you know, pop when you're going through someone's Instagram story. So I'll give you huge props for that. I think you and Greer both. Aww. I mean, you guys both do absolutely really good jobs because you clearly have some professional photographer or videographer doing your stuff because it's really good.
But, I don't. It's really me. Well, there's I will say there's some. Okay. If it looks like a model photo shoot with like a background, yes. But for the most part, it's really just like me and my camera or like anybody that I can hand my phone to.
Really?
Okay. It's all about the crop. If you can crop a photo well, you can make anything look good.
Mm. Okay. So I mean, like I said, your content, Greer's content, I mean, really, really good stuff. So tell everybody, what job do you have in New York? What is this dream job that you have?
Yeah, so I have become, over my lifetime, whether it's through dance or through pageants, really obsessed with health and wellness. I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease right after I competed at Miss America. And so, you know, being someone who's had an eating disorder in the past and like having an autoimmune disease, and then now my autoimmune disease affects my metabolism. So the way that I viewed my body and how my body functions and working out has completely shifted. So I work out to be healthy and to actually like have my body properly function. And so through that, I've really fell in love with holistic health and wellness. And so whenever I was applying for jobs, I knew I wanted to work marketing for a wellness company. And I'm the brand and social marketing manager for Within, WTHN. They're a holistic health and wellness company rooted in traditional Chinese medicine. They started off as an acupuncture studio, but now they have e-commerce products and some of your favorite stores. It's really bougie health and wellness surrounded by really empathetic people. It's female-founded CEO, and I work with a team of all women, which is completely and so inspiring on a day-to-day basis. So I get to show up to work, be creative. I get to help women become healthier versions of themselves, and I get to work in health and wellness. So I'm just so blessed and so happy with the job that I have and the people that I get to work with on a day-to-day basis.
So we know after speaking with Greer a couple weeks ago, obviously you guys moved in together in New York. You collaborated as well with White Rose Swim to launch your own bikini. I believe Serene did too. All three of you, just really, I mean, straight fire bikinis, all three of you that you guys created and were able to do that. Now that launched a couple, like last weekend or two weekends ago. Tell people about the bikini that you created. I believe it's called Man Eater, correct?
Yeah, it's a little sassy.
Yeah, so, it's okay. Go ahead, explain, and tell people how they can purchase it. Because I noticed, you know, after I had Greer on, I noticed that Maria was posting pictures from Stagecoach in Greer's bikini that she had created. And I was like, wow, look at that. It's already spreading. Good for her.
We were able to send our bikinis to a couple of friends.
Nice.
But yeah, so for me, it's like after pageants, I really just like delve into health and wellness. And I have an amazing personal trainer and photographer back in Charleston. And I just found a new hobby in like doing beach bikini photo shoots. And so getting bikini ready and like sharing my health and wellness tips and my workouts has really become something that I've loved to do on my own social media. And then like people always come and ask me for advice on that. And so when I was approached to do this collaboration with White Rose Swim, I was immediately excited. And so I knew I wanted a bikini that really matched the trends that were going on. So I did a reversible cheetah print that has a really unique design. So it's cheetah on one side, red on the other. It's cut in the perfect form that makes all of your womanly assets look really nice. And it's been a way for me to just really celebrate the body that I am able to work and function in, and not the body that I'm able to look good in. And it's been really exciting. I love having creative endeavors. I love being able to work with a team that really inspires my ideas for photo shoots, my ideas for bikini designs, and then being able to celebrate that. So we are walking in a bikini fashion show this Thursday, which I'm really happy. It's been different for me because the last time I've walked in a bikini on stage was whenever I was prepping for pageants. And so I'm really proud of myself because I'm not walking on stage in 0% body fat like I used to prepping for pageants, or I don't have the body that I used to when I competed at Miss America, but I have a healthy body that supports every function that it needs to, and that my thyroid is actually breathing and being able to be celebrated and function properly and not, you know, being able to function off of 0% body fat. And so I'm just really proud of myself and how far that I've come from, you know, having an eating disorder and like going through that and looking at your body as something that could be won or prioritized or called beautiful, or under 110 pounds where a man can lift you above your head. And now being here, I've created a bikini that really celebrates like the shapes of being a woman, and I get to walk in it and the body that I have and curated now just to live a healthy lifestyle and not to live an aesthetic lifestyle. So
yeah,
it will be a fun little moment.
I was going to say, that's going to be great. And then people can purchase your bikini by just going to your Instagram. There should be a link there, I'm assuming.
Yeah, there's a link in my bio and you can purchase it on White Rose Swim. It's reversible. And then we also have a cheeky bottom and a moderate bottom, depending on how much you want to show on the beach.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Nice. Well, I mean, that is, like I said, when Greer came on and I saw that, and then I saw Maria wearing Greer's, and then, so are all three, are you, Serene, and Greer walking this in Thursday's swimwear, what's it called?
a bikini fashion show?
Yeah, fashion show. Yeah, yeah. Are all three?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, nice.
We are.
Okay, so that's perfect. So,
I'm teaching Greer all of my pageant spins.
I was going to say, you have to walk us. I mean, I know you have to, you're literally, being in pageants, you're literally taught how to walk. There's a certain way to walk.
It's my favorite thing to do. I do it on the treadmill every single day.
That is funny. Like, I have a little tie to the pageant world. I judged Miss Dallas 2 years ago, and it was the first time I'd ever been involved in anything pageant related. I've never done it. I've never been asked to be a judge. But I was asked to be a judge, and I've told this story many times. I'll tell it to you again. I found a whole newfound respect for any woman who enters pageants and puts herself out there like those women did, because, you know, the day before the actual pageant takes place is when you get to interview them. And I was like, this has to be the most nerve-wracking thing. A woman walks out. She has her back turned to us. And then she turns around and we have 2 minutes to fire questions at her. She doesn't know anything about us. We just have her bio in front of us. We ask whatever questions we want to ask just to get to know them a little personally. And I'm just thinking, oh my God, these women must be scared shitless just standing there and having to just, on the top of their head, they have no idea what we're asking. They might have an idea based on what they put in their bio and they think, oh, they might ask about this. But for the most part, I think most of the women, there were like 33 women that we had to go through that day. And I was like, all due respect to them. I mean, that is not an easy thing to do. And then the next day was, you know, the actual pageant. And, you know, it was very hard to judge. I this is my first time doing it. I'm asking the other judges, like, what am I voting on here? What am I judging them on? It's so hard because a lot of them are obviously very good looking. They all look great in bikinis. I don't know what to, you know, what is it, the way they walk? Is it the way they present themselves? And it ended up being for me. And I don't even know if you've heard this from other judges in competition. For me, because they all looked good, they had great bodies, they answered their questions well. For me, honestly, it came down to when I saw them walking on the stage and turning around, it was all about who exuded the most confidence to me. That was what I voted on. I had nothing else to go off of because, like I said, they were good looking and they all looked good and their hair was done and then they smiled. I'm like, you know, obviously if you weren't smiling, that was a negative for me, but they were all smiling and they're walking. It's just like, it was just does she have the it factor when she was walking? And that's what I went off of. And I don't know, is when you were on the pageant stage, is that what you felt you had to convey to win over a judge?
Yeah. So also Miss America is very different. So So our interview is 10 minutes long and they ask you a lot about all of the work that you've done with your platform. So I had to speak about the work that I've done with Be The Match.
Yeah.
They ask you a lot of political questions too. Geesh. So I got hit with a lot of Russia questions. I think the question that I won with was about bakers in Colorado who denied a same-sex couple a cake and whether or not I agreed with that decision.
Yeah.
My Miss America question was about foreign policies with Russia and how do we better that connection. So Miss America is like it's a different intensity level. So you have like a lot of politics, a lot of work that you have to do outside of the pageant, and then you have talent.
Yeah.
So it is a little bit different where you feel like you have to be a little mini CEO. Whereas Miss USA, like you really just have to show up as the best version of yourself. And the hardest part for that pageant is forgetting about the perfectionism of it all. So they are like two different little rodeos, but I'm excited to be in your shoes. I'm judging Miss Oklahoma's teen.
Oh, nice.
So I get to see the little teeny boppers in June. And I'm so excited to go like love on those girls and hear more about their lives.
It was such an experience. It was such an eye-opening experience for me, having never been involved in it and just, you know, known about pageants by seeing it on TV, but actually being there and seeing these women be vulnerable and knowing everyone's putting themselves out there, and you're just like, man, this is so tough. I like felt bad, you know, not picking somebody to win when there were 33 women. Clearly 33 women can't win. You know, I got to choose.
Yeah.
You know, like rank your top five. I'm like, really? Five I have to rank? Like, it's impossible. Like,
it is crazy.
They're all impressive.
I do feel like coming home from pageants and then immediately jumping into The Bachelor, and then I've been single for about 2 years, so into dating life, I've just had to relearn how to be a normal person. Like, it sounds so stupid, but it's so true. So that's been a fun experience. Like, not everything has to be an intense interview. Mm. Or like you have to like spill your life gut secrets. Like, well, you're not being judged for any of that.
Well, yeah, when I was talking to Greer, I talked about this whole notion about, I hear all the time that it's so impossible to, you know, dating in New York is the worst. Are you experiencing that as well? Does it just suck because of?
I went on a couple of dates when I first moved to New York.
Yeah.
And then took a little hiatus. I thought I found something with a guy. It lasted like 2 months. That didn't work out. And then I'm slowly but surely like entering the dating scene again.
Mm.
But I'm like truly so ready to find my person. It hurts.
Wow.
Like, it's not really hurts. That's being really dramatic. But I feel like I'm at a point where I am in such a comfortable place of living the life that I want to live. I've done the work. I've like emotionally processed a lot of my life. I've become really secure in who I am, and not only emotionally, but financially, job stability wise, that like, yeah, I'd like want to share that with someone. And honestly, when I was on The Bachelor, like I was really unsure of who I was, and I was filtering what I wanted to do with my life and where I wanted to live. And I'm just at such a secure place where I feel like I'm open. So,
well,
hopefully I'll meet someone soon.
I'll say this. Any guy that is interested in Davia, I don't have a lot of guys that listen to this podcast, mostly women.
Yeah, can you clip this? I need a PSA.
I'm gonna say like, this is literally, I can't imagine any guy who is interested in dating you in the future, they need to listen to this podcast. I think this is like literally an hour and 5 minute dating profile of yourself, to where you get to know everything about Davia. And at this point, like, I mean, everything that you explained, everything you talked about in this, like, this needs to be something that any guy who's interested in you needs to listen to, because it's almost like you don't have to, you know, so you won't have to repeat yourself. But I think this is such a good presentation of yourself, which is why I think,
yeah,
like, hey, any guy out there, listen to this, and you'll know that Davi is a catch, and it's all here in this hour and 5 minutes that we recorded. So, Davia, thank you so much for coming on. And again, for the first 20 minutes of this podcast, being very open and sharing your story that, like you said, most, probably 98% of Bachelor Nation had no idea about, or at least knew the depths of it. So I really appreciate you doing that. Good luck with the bikini line and everything, the fashion show that's going on Thursday. Good luck with everything. We'll obviously be in touch. So take care. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And if anybody's interested in learning more about bone marrow donation, you can find lots of great resources. You can even sign up for the registry. Getting on the registry is just as easy as swabbing your cheeks and mailing it back in. So you can go to bethematch.com and learn more about that process. Or you can DM me on Instagram. I'm happy to share. So
absolutely.
Just had to say that as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you so much again for coming on. Really appreciate it. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be on. You're the best. This is my first podcast ever for Bachelor.
Oh my God. I didn't realize I was the first. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad I was the first. I really appreciate you doing that. And again, we'll definitely have you on in the future at some point too.
Love that.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Davia for coming on. I will repeat this until I stop doing podcasts. And that is, everybody's got a story. And just because The Bachelor chooses not to focus on some people's stories doesn't mean that there aren't interesting ones out there. And Davia's is about is probably top five of contestants who barely got airtime on the show or got airtime and you just don't know enough about them. But those first 20, 25 minutes of her telling her background and what she went through, you didn't get that at any point during The Bachelor or Bachelor in Paradise. So that's why one of the reasons I wanted to have her on. I knew she had a story just doing the research on her. The more I dug, the more I was like, wow, she's been through some stuff and I want her to share that. And she did. So thank you so much to Davia for sharing that. Thank you all for listening. Please follow on Apple Podcasts, rate and review. Please hit play. It's the only way it counts as a download. The Daily Roundup was posted a couple hours ago. Sports Daily posted an hour ago. Your transcript for both this interview and the Daily Roundup is up on realitysteve.com after this podcast post. So you can go, if you don't have time to listen, you can go read the interview. So again, for Davia Esther Bunch, I'm Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in, and I will talk to you tomorrow. See ya!
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.